All right, my name is Peter Flemings. I'm a professor with the Department of Earth and Planetary Sciences, and I'm a research scientist with the Institute for Geophysics. And I'm going to tell you a story about methane hydrate. If you take methane and water and you mix it together and you raise the pressure a lot and you make it really cold, you form a solid that's very much like ice. But that solid has a concentration of methane that's 164 times the what it would be just in the atmosphere at present. So it's a very dense carbon source. It's a very dense energy source, and it interests a lot of people. In fact, 5 to 25% of the world's organic carbon is trapped in these methane hydrates. And that means it has a role in our climate cycles. It is a potential energy source. And people even talk about it as a way to potentially store carbon dioxide in the subsurface. So more than 10 years ago, I was sitting in my office and I was thinking about what would be a fun way to study this stuff. And I thought that if I could get a sample of these methane hydrates as they're buried in the earth, and if I could study that sample, I could begin to understand what the role of that hydrate was in as a potential energy source, its potential role in climate change, all these things. And it's a long story from then to now. However, the bottom line is that the University of Texas received the largest federal grant at that time that I think they had ever received. It was a $115 million grant, and our job was to go out and drill a well, several wells, and take samples and recover those samples full of methane hydrate and then study the properties of those methane hydrates. To give you a sense of the scale of that, the place we wanted to go was 150 miles offshore in the Gulf of Mexico. The water depth was over a mile deep, and we had to drill a well that was over 3,000 feet deep at the bottom of that mile of water. So I want to give you a few highlights about what that was like. The first thing, I remember walking into the UT Tower. The UT Tower is this sort of iconic building where all the leaders of UT live, and little professors like me don't go there, and I had never been there. And I had to explain to the president at that time, Greg Fenves, I said, yes, I'd like the University of Texas to become the first deep water operator that is a university ever, and that means that we'll be in charge of contracting a drilling vessel, permitting wells, ensuring the program, and we'll be responsible for every aspect of the program. And if anything goes wrong, it's our fault. The response was from the president, "You want to do what?" And then I had to go back and I told him it all over again, and then I'll never forget this because it was a very awkward moment in that building, and there was a really long pause. And then finally President Fenves said, "Well, we'll see if we can make that happen." This is a place where things happen. And I have to tell you that UT is an extraordinary place that took on the responsibility of this expedition to do this science. And they supported us from the level of the units of the Jackson School to the presidency and even the regent's office to get this project done. So that's my logistics story, but I want to also tell you about a technical story. Here's the problem. There's existent technology that's well established to drill wells, and we've all heard about that or seen it in the movies. But if you want to drill a well and actually get a sample of methane hydrate, you have an additional problem, which is a mile down in the ocean and then another 3,000 feet deep into the sediment, we need to capture a core, a sample of this sediment, and we need to bring that sample all the way back onto the ship. But remember, the methane hydrate depends on pressure and temperature to stay solid. So I need to bring that sample all the way back to the ship at the same pressure it was at the bottom of the well, some 9,000 feet away. What that means is that the pressure of that system will be over 3,500 PSI. It's huge. I've got to take that pressure at depth. I've got to extract that core out of the ship at that pressure. So here I am, 150 miles out in the ocean. If you've ever been on a drilling rig, to give you a sense, there are 130 people working 24 hours a day. Every one of those people, their sole job is to help me acquire this core. And I'm spending $400,000 every day just to be there. And we everything goes great. We drill our well. We drill down 3,000 feet below the seafloor. We have 9,000 feet of pipe out. And it takes 12 hours to get a single core. If things are going well, we're gonna take 20 cores on this whole mission. The first core comes up to the drill floor, and the first thing we do is we stick a pressure gauge on this, and we want that pressure to say about 3,500 PSI, which is the pressure down in the hole. And I turn on that pressure gauge, and I look at that pressure, and it reads zero. It reads atmospheric pressure. And we know that our sample of core of methane hydrate is gone. It's evaporated into the atmosphere. I figure no problem. We'll do it again. And 12 hours later, the core comes back on the deck. We stick the pressure gauge on, and it reads zero. Things are getting kind of tough, and this goes on for days. They still read zero after seven pressure cores. I'm a little stressed. Every morning, the Department of Energy calls me because this is a big project, and they want to hear about the successes, and they've got a website, and they're writing it all down, And they're getting a little testy. They're not really very happy with my situation. And then offshore, you can still get the internet. And I know things are really bad when I disappear from the DOE website as an example of one of their successful programs. I haven't slept for days. So there we are. We're halfway done with our project. We've spent half of our money. We have not gotten a single sample. And I've got one more well to drill. And I announce, because I don't know what else to do, I announce that we're taking the day off. We're going to flush $400,000 down the drain, and we're all going to stand around, and we're going to try to figure out why this tool is not working in the bottom of the hole. We took this tool out. I still remember on the deck of the drilling vessel, we take it apart piece by piece. And there are hundreds of pieces to this tool. And we're taking it apart piece by piece, and then we start putting it back together. And when I say we, there's a very technically experienced company that has that runs this tool and understands every aspect of this tool much better than I do. What they found, finally, after about 18 hours of stripping this tool apart, is that we had made a minor change in that tool that we did not think could conceivably affect the tool's performance, that we were now pretty sure was completely the explanation for why that tool was not working. We stripped out that change that we thought was an improvement. We put the tool back together in a way it was before we ever made that tool. And we started running that tool. The first core came up, and I remember going up there and sticking the pressure gauge on, and it was 3,600 PSI. The second core was 3,200 PSI, and we recovered 11 cores at pressure in succession, and it was a success. That meant that we could go on now, and I have these cores stored in the basement and perform new experiments on these materials and begin them to study them in a way that really starts to illuminate these fundamental problems in climate and in energy. And I'll tell you, sometimes even today, I go down into the basement and I stare at those cores, And I think about that 2 weeks out on the drilling rig trying to acquire those cores, and sometimes it's a good feeling to see them there. So we've done some great science. That science is because of extraordinary efforts across UT, and it's also represents overcoming significant technical challenges. That's my story.
Absolutely.